This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, August 8th, 2019, on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead on our show, Walton Arts Center's new season includes performers from across the country and from around the world. We'll take a quick and incomplete tour of the season that starts next month with the premiere of a brand new Blue Man Group show later this hour. After this hour on NPR's Here and Now, for veterans with mental health issues, the biggest hurdle is often admitting they need help. A continuation of a conversation with two vets about PTSD on Here and Now, beginning at 1, right after Ozarks at Large. Tonight, an update on redesign plans for Luther George Park in Springdale will take place at the Shiloh Museum Meeting Hall on West Price in Springdale. That's from 5:30 to 6:30 tonight. City officials say the design team has been incorporating community ideas into that design. You can find out more at the Downtown Springdale Alliance Facebook page. This is Ozarks at Large. Following the weekend mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson is addressing the resurgence of white supremacy. The man who is accused of killing 22 people at an El Paso Walmart posted a racist screed on the web before the shooting. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Governor Hutchinson about his announcement this week at the Sheriff's Association in Rogers, during which he urged lawmakers to pass a hate crime bill.
When we talk about a hate crime law, what does that mean in terms of prosecution?
Well, that would mean that if an individual targets someone else for a violent crime because of their religion, because of their race, ethnicity, or other factor, then they would be an enhancement on their penalty because we want to discourage that kind of targeted hate. It diminishes all of us whenever we have people because of their religion, faith, because of their race, are more vulnerable to crime and being targeted. We want to discourage that. I think that's reflected in what we've seen nationally, but I think it's important in Arkansas. So the form this law would take is enhancement if it is defined as a hate crime, which when someone is targeted because of being a special category.
Any timeline for this? I mean, would this require a special session? Is this something that would have to wait till the legislative session in 2021?
Well, right now it would be brought up in the next session of the General Assembly, which is some time away. But we want to first build the support for it to make sure there's broad legislative support for it. I think there is in this day and time, and when Arkansas is one of only four states that does not have an effective hate crime statute, we need to send the right signal. And when we have the support for it, then we'll look at what the proper time to bring that forth is. There is some urgency, but we also want to make sure there's support for it and the legislature has time to consider it.
So why now? This type of legislation has been brought up by other lawmakers before during other legislative sessions, and these discussions have been happening for a while. So what's changed?
Well, this is the first time that I've come out strongly in favor of this. I know that it was considered long before I was elected governor. It's been brought up, I know, once in the last session, but we had a different focus and it didn't get through. I think also the need today, there's been a rise in white supremacy, white identity groups that some of which carry out acts of violence, and there's concerns here in this state as well as nationally, and we need to send the strongest signal possible that we should not be committing violent crimes, targeting groups. And whenever we can pass this law, then I think it will make us safer. I think it will discourage that kind of conduct and send a signal that that's not acceptable here in this state. And if you commit that kind of hate crime, you're going to spend a long time in prison.
Do you think there needs to be more done on the federal level, especially now when the numbers show that there has been a rise in white supremacy membership and groups. And we haven't really heard much about that on the federal level.
Well, we, post 9/11, shifted a lot of our federal resources to fighting global terrorism and looking more at the jihadist. And that still is a risk that we want to make sure we have resources to devote to. But we've also seen this increase in domestic terrorism. I had to deal with this back in the 80s when I was a federal prosecutor, and it diminished since then, but we've seen a resurgence. And so, yes, we have to have a balanced use of our federal resources, looking at each source of terrorism and violent acts. So it's an enforcement responsibility first, but it has to rely upon good intelligence. And so, you know, the FBI, other federal law enforcement agencies working with the states needs to identify these risks, make sure that we have the right intelligence, enforcement operations, and then the right penalties when we're successful.
Right. In the 80s, you prosecuted a group called the Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord, a white supremacist group. Are you surprised, concerned that we're still having a very similar conversation more than 30 years later?
I am surprised. I know that this is a battle that every generation has to fight, and you can't say we've won this victory of fairness and equality in our society. We have to learn it over and over again, but I'm still surprised that there has been this significant resurgence across America, and we've seen evidences of it here in Arkansas as well. And when that happens, the leaders need to state very clearly their opposition to it and how it's not a part of American society. And in this case, we need to enhance the penalties and our enforcement efforts.
What kind of responsibility do you think politicians, lawmakers, people who have public influence have in quashing racism?
What's important, what we say, words make a difference. And, for example, everybody who has the erroneous belief of white supremacy, they're not all violent, but their words sometimes encourage others to do that, either implicitly or explicitly. And so words make a difference, and we need to be careful what we say. But also sometimes silence is not good. And so that's one of the reasons that it's important for me as governor to speak out that this is harmful to us as society, and we need to do more. So there is a responsibility of leadership and set the right tone for America.
Another type of legislation that you seem to be open to discussing are red flag laws, which authorize courts to basically issue a type of protection order that allows police to temporarily confiscate firearms from people who are deemed to be a danger to themselves or to others. Senator Tom Cotton has also expressed interest in backing something like that. Where does that stand right now for you?
Well, it's really changed the dynamics of the national discussion. You've had President Trump indicate a willingness to look at these extreme risk protection orders or red flag laws, and then you had Senator Cotton indicate the same. So there is a national discussion going on that's reinvigorated here in Arkansas. I'm very concerned about the constitutional rights that are involved here and that there's adequate due process. There needs to be a high bar for taking a constitutional right away from somebody. So we've got to get this right, but it is a topic of conversation, and I know it will be within the legislature as well, but we're not there yet. So I'm anxious to learn as to from mental health professionals as well as from other policymakers as to what might be the right approach here.
Thank you, Governor Hutchinson, for speaking with us.
All right. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
That was Governor Asa Hutchinson speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. Just ahead on today's show, Thinking about running for office? A half-day free session devoted to everything from fundraising to reporting those funds will take place in Bentonville. We'll talk to a pair of organizers about the bipartisan approach to getting people interested in seeking office in just a few minutes. This week, the Rogers School District cut the ribbon on its 16th elementary school.
On this one, on the count of three, you're going to cut the ribbon and don't cut his finger. One, two, three.
Afterwards, the students who will be attending Fairview Elementary and their parents streamed into the new building to get a look around and meet their teachers. Laura Quillen, the school's principal, says unlike some of the older elementary schools, Fairview has a multi-purpose room.
And many schools don't have that. In an elementary, you typically don't have an auditorium or anything like that. So this multi-purpose room allows for teams to come together and bring their learners in. We can do science experiments. We could have guest speakers. And it's just a warm learning environment as opposed to maybe a little bit more formal auditorium.
Quillen says in general, a lot has changed about the spaces in which students are learning, and the new elementary school reflects that.
We are expecting our learners to be a little bit more cognizant or aware of their learning style. So if you walk through our classrooms, you will see flex seating, where some tables are on the floor and they just barely can sit under them. Others have tall stools because they need to wiggle a little bit more or might want to stand.
Quillen says the school district has a goal of having one-to-one technology for each student, and the elementary schools are no exception.
We will open this building almost at a one-to-one ratio, which is nice. Our lower grades like the iPad because they're used to phones and they usually can work them without anything. We do a digital math curriculum to enhance what is taught in the classroom, and that can be on either platform. Our second through fifth grade classes will all have Chromebook carts, so the kids learn early on how to use a laptop-type device.
Fairview is built for a capacity of a little over 700 students, and although they anticipated to have about 450 students the first year, they'll be starting with about 560. Rogers School Superintendent Marlon Berry says a lot of projections go into figuring out whether a district needs to build a new school.
The hard part is projecting how many kindergartners we will have come, and we do a little bit of that by monitoring live births in a county. It's a funny thing, but the number of live births about 5 years later, they show up in kindergarten. So we can kind of track that backwards and come up with a percentage of live births in Washington and or Benton County that will come to our school. So we do a lot of projecting that way so that we can plan for it. And that's what the Board of Education did.
The district opened Janie Darr Elementary in 2013. Barry says that school has continuously filled up, so they knew they needed another school on the southwest side of the city.
Tucker Elementary nearby also had grown to well over 600 and some kids. So we knew it needed to be here. So that's really, once we knew that, we can actually build an elementary in about 18 months. So you can react pretty quick to that.
The school district asked for the millage increase to fund Fairview back in 2017. That funding will also cover the construction of another elementary school in the future. Barry says projections for middle, junior, and high school students are more manageable.
We know how many sixth graders we had last year and by their feeder pattern where they're going to head for middle school. So it's a little bit known to us that way. We also do a cohort survival type of projection so that we know historically how many sixth graders go to seventh. That can encompass our growth as well. So we know people continue to move into this community and so we can project that way.
Barry says the district is also remodeling three of its older elementary schools built in the 1950s and 60s, and for now, doesn't have any plans to construct any more schools. The 2020 political season isn't far away, presidential campaigns notwithstanding. For people thinking about running for city council, school board, or the state legislature in 2020, there is a symposium a week from today at Record Downtown in Bentonville. The Northwest Arkansas Emerging Leaders Political and Government Affairs team of the Rogers Lowell Chamber of Commerce is sponsoring the free half-day event. Two organizers, Ross Phillips, Vice President of Community Development at the Chamber, and John Moran, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio yesterday to talk about the program. That program will include a panel I'll moderate with legislators Megan Godfrey and Dan Douglas about bipartisan legislation they co-sponsored. John Moran says that panel is a return to something organizers did at the last such event.
This was one of our more popular aspects of the program when we did it 2 years ago. We had Grant Hodges, and who's now the mayor of McGill, who's now the mayor of Fort Smith, who were representatives. They did a bipartisan presentation on the Martin Luther King, Robert E. Lee separation bill several years ago, or earlier that session. And we presented them in that environment, and it was one of the, on the surveys we got back from people, that was one of the more important part of the programs that they thought that was, how do you present a controversial issue in a bipartisan environment? And that was what we're playing to this time as well. So that issue has, you know, strong feelings on both sides, and you had in this instance, you had Democrats and Republicans coming together to get it passed because Megan sponsored it and Dan co-sponsored it, but there were Republicans and Democrats that were co-sponsors on that legislation as well. So,
this is informational. Well, I wonder if you also hope that it is somewhat cynicism smothering, because so many people can have a very bad attitude towards politics, let alone getting into politics. And I wonder if you're hoping that some of these sessions will show people that you can get in this and not sling mud, or it doesn't have to be as corrosive as you might think.
That is one of the things, underlying things we're trying to highlight here is, you know, however way we've gotten here, we've gotten to the extremes in our legislative environment. And we need to find a way to get back to being more civil in our legislative endeavors. And so this program is designed to that. There is a way to get things done without the name calling and the things that go into the vitriolic political environment we have right now. And so there is a way to get there. And moderate is, you know, become a dirty word, but it shouldn't have to be.
Or compromise.
Or compromise. Yeah. And so this is what we're trying to get to, is folks that can understand each other and work together in a legislative environment. And that's kind of the principles we're trying to push here with this program.
Ross, this is taking place at Record in Bentonville, but you don't have to be from Benton County.
No, you do not. So the program at the core of it is Northwest Arkansas Emerging Leaders. You don't even have to be from Northwest Arkansas. You can be from, you know, anywhere in Arkansas. If you just have an interest in running for political office, this is something that's for you. Or like I said earlier, if you just want to know more, this is something for you to be educated, because it is a young professional program at the core of it as well. And there's that big misconception that young professionals really, they're not informed. So we're trying to raise the curtain and say, hey, we're putting this out there for you guys so you can be informed and you know what's going on in your community and you have the means to get involved.
I imagine there's also the possibility of someone thinking, I might want to run. Then they go and they learn and go, it's not quite the time in my life to do that.
We've heard stories from that coming from the past. You know, people will say, hey, I'm really interested in running. Okay, we tell them about the Ready, Set, Run program that we have. They come, they set through, and then like, this might not be for me. So both ways, whether you think you might be interested, it could stir that passion a little bit more, or whether you think you're interested and you're like, this is not for me. I want to get involved on a local level, but just not in this way, shape, or form.
And we've been doing this program in the off years before an election for several cycles now, going back probably 10 years at least. And we have some alumni that have gone through there that have run for city council, that are on the city council now and are in the legislature. And so we're pretty proud of that. And so we think we're making a difference, and hope we're making a difference with this program a little bit at a time. And so we encourage people to come out and listen. And if you're not ready to run in the next cycle, you might be ready 4 years from now, or whatever the circumstances that cause you to run, hope you start thinking about it seriously.
I mentioned Megan and Godfrey and Dan Douglas on one panel. Who are some of the other folks that are involved?
We have an alumni from the last one, Representative Grant Hodges, who's outgoing from the legislature. He's not running again. He's going to be doing the fundraising for it. One of your content partners, Robbie Brock, is going to kick off the program, kind of give the cheerleading speech at the beginning. And Mike Malone with Runway, who's former CEO of Northwest Arkansas Council, is going to be our keynote speaker at lunch to kind of tie it all together. You know, you've learned all these great things, now go out and change the world type of speech. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that's what Mike's going to talk about. But so there's some of those areas. And we have presenters on social media, how to develop a social media strategy. And then also, what else, Ross? On messaging, there's somebody talking about effective messaging.
Effective messaging and communication. I think Krista Kupp with the Mitchell Communications Group will be talking about that.
You know, we just mentioned we have Republican presenters, we have Democratic presenters, we have folks that are on both sides of the spectrum. So that's just to reflect the bipartisan nature that this program embodies. We don't slant it one way or the other. We have Republicans and Democrats giving information out there about how to run for office.
John Moran is Senior Vice President of Government Affairs at the Rogers Lowell Chamber of Commerce, and Ross Phillips is Vice President of Community Development. The Chamber is sponsoring the Ready, Set, Run program Thursday, August 15th at Record Downtown in Bentonville from 8 to 1. It's free. Lunch will be provided. Registration can be found at NorthwestArkansasEmergingLeaders.com. Speaking of Northwest Arkansas Emerging Leaders, tomorrow the Young Professionals Summit will take place at the Walton Arts Center. Ross Phillips says it's a full day of professional development and learning more about the region.
We have some good keynote speakers. Helena Gaddison, she'll be coming in and talking about your own personal branding. And then we have Joe Randall from the Walton Family Foundation kind of talking about everything that they're doing for the community. This year's theme is all about influence. So it's about having influence in your community. We're all young professionals. We might not have the influence, but how do we get that influence in whenever we don't have it?
Tickets for tomorrow's Young Professional Summit at the Walton Arts Center can be found at waltonartcenter.org. Also, at waltonartcenter.org, so much information about the upcoming season at the venue. More than 125 performance nights open to the public, from Broadway shows to the West Street Live Singer-Songwriter Series to the 10x10 series are scheduled. Fiddler on the Roof, The Book of Mormon, and more will be in the Walton Arts Center over the next 11 months. Single tickets for each event become available tomorrow morning, and series subscriptions are available now. Yesterday, Jennifer Ross, Director of Programming at Walton Arts Center, and Scott Galbraith, Vice President Programming and Executive Producer, came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about that upcoming season. Scott says the 10x10 season, 10 performances with $10 tickets, covers much of the globe.
It's still one of my favorite things that we do, and I think it's one of the series that makes Walton Arts Center in Northwest Arkansas unique among our peers, because I have never seen a series like this anywhere else in the country that I've worked or that we've interacted with at the various conferences we go to. Jennifer, have you?
Absolutely. I haven't heard of anybody else. Yeah. And when we talk about our 10x10 series with our colleagues across the country, they sort of look at us like we're absolutely nuts. To do what we do and to offer $10 tickets for these types of programs, for this really high caliber work that we present. A lot of it is because we know that Walton Arts Center isn't making anything on these shows. We're presenting them to the community as part of our service to Northwest Arkansas. And we hope that people understand that when they buy that $10 ticket, they're doing a little more than just supporting this artist. They're supporting Walton Arts Center's involvement and commitment to Northwest Arkansas.
And ability for some people who can't afford higher price tickets to be able to still have a night at Walton Arts Center.
Well, there is absolutely that. I mean, mathematically, just simply from a math standpoint, these shows, most of the time, there's no chance that we can recover the cost of this performance from the box office. It's just not possible. But that's not the point. The point is to provide those on limited resources an opportunity to experience the arts. But regardless of resources, to lower the barrier of participation to such a point that why not take a risk on an art form you've never heard of before, you've never experienced before? So it's access both from a financial perspective, but also from a perceptual perspective. It's just, it's an open invitation. And we are consistently thrilled with the number of folks who come to these events and leave going, I would never have thought I liked that. That's the point of 10 by 10.
What are some of the 10 by 10 attractions this year?
Well, it's a truly global series that we have going on. One of them, we have work from Africa, from India, from
Cuba.
Ireland, Cuba, England. Have I got
Germany, all the... Piano Battle is sort of a their German
Piano
artist.
Battle has a German component, mm-hmm. and Sweden.
Yes. Exactly.
So it's all over.
I mean, we can't talk about them all, but there is, you mentioned Africa,
yeah.
and this is an amazing musical ensemble that's coming in.
Nubuntu is the name of the company. It is a five-voice, all-female vocal a cappella company from Zimbabwe. Amazing rhythms, gorgeous tonality, and some of it is in English, most of it is not, but the language isn't important because they are terrific storytellers as well, so they're providing the cultural context behind the music before it's performed. We've been looking to book them for a little over 2 years
Absolutely,
now, and
yes.
we were finally able to make it work in this season, and we're thrilled. They're so spectacular.
And the ensemble really promotes the belief that music can be a vehicle for change.
There's dance from India, mm-hmm. and there's someone called Socks in the Frying Pan.
Yes.
That one doesn't really explain itself by title.
Really?
No.
You don't
think
so? So it's a cooking show. And teasing. It's a fantastic Irish folk band from what is essentially the seat of folk music in Ireland. And they are fun. They are brilliant musicians. But it's a fantastic evening of Irish folk in a very relaxed and casual kind of environment. It's terrific.
Let's see. There's also, let's talk about Broadway. That is something that gets a lot of people excited.
It does, yes. And us too.
Yes, I'm sure. Once on This Island and The Band's Visit, two pretty new musicals, right?
They are new touring. Once on This Island was actually created, I forgot how many years ago now. So this is a revival production of Once on This Island. Happens to be one of my absolute favorite shows of all time. It's Aaron Zinflaherty who wrote Ragtime and Anastasia and a bunch of other work, but it is a wonderful Caribbean music style retelling of the Little Mermaid tale. And so it has a story that's familiar, but it takes place on a hurricane ravaged island, which is all too recent a memory for all of us. And, you know, we're going into hurricane season, so we may, God forbid, see that again. But it is just this wonderful, uplifting, life-affirming musical from the Caribbean. And then The Band's Visit is one of Jennifer's favorite shows of all time. I know that to be true.
It truly is. The Band's Visit transported me when I saw it in New York. It's a beautiful story. It is quiet. It moves you into their world because you have to be engaged in it. The music is phenomenal. It's the story is a gentle story about musicians just sort of plopping down in the wrong town. And then the citizens of the town feel compelled to take care of them because that's what they do. The hospitality that is offered in that part of the country, it's very much like Southern hospitality. Mm-hmm. If somebody shows up at the door that you were not expecting, typically you're going to take care of them, and that's what happens as this town comes together to take care of this band overnight before the bus can come pick them up and put them where they're supposed to be or take them where they're supposed to be.
And so despite language and cultural barriers, because these are two cultures that have been historically warring, but so despite those clear obstacles, they find a commonality through music.
Blue Man Group.
They come into the building next week.
Yeah.
And
Monday. They take over.
And they'll be here for 5-6 weeks.
Yes.
Ending with production.
So this is figuring out the show and...
They're building their new show, Speechless. However many years ago it was, they built their first Performing Arts Center tour at Walton Arts Center and launched it from here. This is the second Performing Arts Center tour that Blue Man is creating, and they're launching it from Walton Arts Center, and we're really excited to have them back.
And that, so they're going to be there, they'll be figuring it out?
Yep, in our building, rehearsing it? You got it, exactly right. Rehearsing it, adding material, tossing out material, building physical sets that go along with it, right. tweaking the show as it goes.
And before they leave, then they premiere it, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get to see it first.
A bunch of performances, yeah.
Lyle Lovett is coming back.
Lyle. And his acoustic group, yes.
And his acoustic group, mm-hmm. He was last here with...
John Hyatt.
John Hyatt a couple of years ago, yeah.
That's right.
Good memory.
Well, it was a great show. It was a fantastic show. That's part of the Land O'Lakes concert series.
Yes.
Which also has Arlo Guthrie.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse Cook, who I wasn't as familiar with until I started getting ready for this interview, and he sounds pretty fascinating.
Jesse Cook is an incredible guitar player. He may sound familiar to some people because he does have an AETN special or two, maybe more than that, and so or a PBS special that has played on AETN. And he's just an incredible guitar player.
So much. Mystery Science Theater Live is coming. Something called Bollywood Boulevard, which I think is going to be amazing. The Boston Brass. There's family stuff. Opera Fayetteville is going to be...
I love that you mentioned them because they are... we have started working with them more and more. They performed with us in our venue last year, and we have found a way to make sure that that can happen again. We're hoping that that will continue to grow over time. But creating relationships with the local arts groups is something that we are actively doing, and we're now working with the Fayetteville Film Festival. Mm. They're curating two nights for us, one in January that will focus on Arkansas filmmakers, and one in April as part of a new festival, and that one will focus on Indian, which is to say South Asian, Indian filmmakers as well.
Public radio fans will be happy to hear David Sedaris is coming back.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That is in November.
It is. It's on a Sunday evening in November, and his new book, Calypso, is hilarious to screen.
All right. What did I leave out that you want to make sure people know about?
Well, you had mentioned Bollywood Boulevard, and so that is part of a new effort called Mosaics, which is an annual festival that we've created that will allow us to amplify the voice of one of the cultural communities. The very first year of Mosaics, we're focusing on the Indian community, the South Asian Indian community, and one of the pieces in that festival is called Abha, and that's the show that's on 10 by 10. It is a piece of classical Bharatanatyam dance. We had a particular artist lined up that ended up not being available. We have an advisory committee from within the Indian community, and we went to them and said, help us think of another artist that you think would be relevant in our community. And they came up with this name. We went and looked, fell in love. Turns out that artist had never been to the U.S. before.
Huh.
So we booked them, and they are creating a national tour, their U.S. premier tour, because of our event. So that's Abha, and I am so looking forward to that company, partly because the work is spectacular, but also because we've had, in the first year of this new festival, been able to bring an artist to the U.S. for the first time and expose them to a different part of the world. That is so exciting
to me. That is very exciting. Jennifer, what did I leave out that you want to make sure people know about?
Well, the LOL at Wax series is one that I really love because I like to laugh. And two of the shows that I'm looking forward to are actually shows that Walton Arts Center didn't book. We have promoters bringing them in. It's December 6th. Randy Rainbow is coming. And Randy Rainbow is a satirist, humorist. He's on YouTube.
On Fresh Air with Terry Gross a couple weeks ago.
Yes, he was. Yeah. That's right. And he's very funny. He's December 6th, Friday. And then December 7th, Saturday, Tim Hawkins, with special guest Dustin Nickerson will be here. And Tim Hawkins is presented by High Gear Promotions, LLC. So we've got promoters bringing in two very different comedians. And we, as the venue, we are presenting both of these comedians because they are so different. We didn't feel like they were in conflict at all because their audiences are very different. And so it's a way for our LOL at WAC series to reach out and reach a broad spectrum of our community.
Jennifer Ross, Director of Programming at Walton Arts Center, and Scott Galbraith, Vice President Programming and Executive Producer at the Walton Arts Center, came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about the upcoming season at the venue. More information and complete schedules can be found at waltonartcenter.org. Single tickets for shows go on sale tomorrow morning at 10.
The Delta Dental of Arkansas Foundation is Arkansas's nonprofit dental health plan. With more than 30 years of experience, Delta Dental offers specialized dental coverage for employees and family members of Arkansas businesses, nonprofits, and governmental organizations with a mission to improve health and to be the leading force in the delivery of quality dental insurance services. More information at ArkansasMissionOfMercy.org.
Jenna Lorenzo is director, writer, producer, and star of Les Bomb, a film that premiered at the 2018 Bentonville Film Festival, winning Best Narrative Feature Jury Award, and is now streaming on Netflix. This summer, she's writing several new screenplays while in residence at the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow in Eureka Springs. Sunday, she'll deliver a public talk about her life and work. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tells us more.
Les Bomb, L-E-Z-B-O-M-B, is about a closeted lesbian Lauren who's invited her new girlfriend Haley to come home with her for Thanksgiving, fully intending to come out to her family. Her mom, however, is under the impression she's bringing home her longtime roommate, Austin, a guy. Here's a clip of Lauren calling her mom the day before with Haley listening in.
Mom, when are you and your friend coming tomorrow? I need a game plan. I don't like surprises.
I'm coming at like 10. She's coming a little later.
Okay. I love you. Bye. Mwah.
I love you too. Bye. Mm.
She doesn't like surprises.
Surprise! I'm not a boyfriend.
Right.
The roommate, Austin, played by Brandon Michael Hall, has a secret crush on Lauren, so invites himself as well, covertly disrupting the coming out. Jenna Lorenzo, who wrote, directed, and co-produced the comedy feature film, leads the ensemble cast. Her girlfriend, played by Caitlin Mayner, noted actors Cloris Leachman and Bruce Dern anchor an array of scenes as very funny and acerbic grandparents. Deidre O'Connell plays weary Mother Rose, who operates a motel, along with her bickering husband, Kevin Pollack. Other family join the celebration, creating certain chaos. And as the title infers, Lauren eventually drops her ground-shaking news on her dysfunctional family.
Well, I mean, it is close to home. I mean, I literally shot the movie in my childhood home. And the motel is my mother's motel that my grandfather built in the 50s, and my mother still runs. So the story is quite personal, and the characters are based on or inspired by my family. And of course, some of it is punched up for comedy. But the experience of coming out for me had a lot to do with, you know, stepping outside of the expectation I had for myself and the expectations I thought my family had for me. And really, I wanted to explore that idea of, like, the acceptance that I was fighting for was my own, because I think a lot of things in life, the conflict is largely an internal one.
After premiering at the 2018 Bentonville Film Festival and being widely lauded on the LGBTQ Film Festival circuit, Les Bomb leveraged a rave Hollywood Reporter review, making it a possible contender as a queer holiday comedy classic.
It'd be a dream come true. And hearing you call it a warm comedy, it just, like, really touches my heart, because that was my intention is to capture that warmth of family, but, like, the pressures around family and the dysfunction within every family, and trying to tell a story that's relatable and accessible. I personally feel like comedy is a wonderful vehicle to do that, because if you can disarm people with comedy, I think it gives an opportunity for them to be more receptive to the subject matter, particularly if they have an opinion of it.
Lorenzo, who classifies herself primarily as a writer, recently played a supporting role in the Oscar-winning Green Book about a biased working-class Italian-American bouncer played by Viggo Mortensen, who agrees to be a paid driver for a famous African-American classical pianist, brilliantly acted by Mahershala Ali, together touring the country, including the Deep South, in the early 1960s.
It was a wonderful experience just being on set and being able to watch people like Viggo, Mahershala, and Linda just work with Peter and try to just soak it in like a sponge, because there's just so much to learn from people with that talent and those skills and experience. So I just felt it was this incredible opportunity to just continue to learn and grow.
This summer, Jenna Lorenzo has cloistered herself at the Writers' Colony at Derry Hollow in Eureka Springs, her first time on the Ozarks.
I had no idea what I was coming to, where I was coming. It was a wonderful surprise coming through Main Street and just seeing all of these old, beautiful buildings and all the stone and the springs and all these posters for ghost tours and healing modalities. I was really excited when I saw all of that. And so I've been writing quite a bit, but it's easy to get distracted by the charm in the town.
Lorenzo is a recipient of the Colony's Getting It Right Fellowship, funded by Eureka's LGBTQ community, the Village Arts Council, Local Flavor, Brews Cafe, and Regalia Handmade Clothing. At the Writers' Colony, Lorenzo is working on two new feature comedy scripts this Sunday at 2 p.m. The Writers' Colony at Derry Hollow and Five and Dime Drama Collective are hosting a showing of Les Baume. Afterwards, Lorenzo will conduct a Q&A with the audience about being a screenwriter.
The greatest challenge is maintaining energy through all of the no's, because there's far more no's than yeses. And so I think that when I have the opportunity to chat with students or other creatives or other writers, I love having the conversation around telling you stories that are really grounded in one's truth and heart. Because like when it cuts to the core like that, I think that it gives you that energy and passion to sustain a project from start to finish. And so those are the conversations I love having.
The event will take place at Main Stage Creative Community Center at 67 North Main Street in Eureka Springs. Refreshments will be served. Admission is free. Donations appreciated. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Writers' Colony at Derry Hollow provides uninterrupted residencies for writers of all genres, including chefs, composers, and artists. Over 1,400 writers from 48 states and 11 countries have stayed at the colony. If you'd like to apply for a residency, you can visit writerscolony.org.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Private giving to the University of Arkansas totaled $163.4 million in the 12-month fiscal year that ended June 30th. That's a drop of about 44% from fiscal 2018 totals of $292.7 million. But in that year, the school's fundraising efforts were propelled largely by two substantial gifts, totaling $160 million from the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation and Wingate Charitable Foundation to establish the UA School of Art. UA fundraising in fiscal 2019 did easily surpass totals from 2017 and 2016. It also puts the school's Campaign Arkansas fundraising drive at $1.11 billion. When UA officials announced the Campaign Arkansas drive in September 2016, $1 billion was the goal. The school is now hoping to raise $1.25 billion when the campaign ends on June 30th, 2020. Coming up after the break, we will visit with a Fayetteville physician who has created a bariatric surgery practice that is a national destination. You are listening to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
Roller Weight Loss and Advanced Surgery in Fayetteville and Northwest Medical Center Springdale have become the fifth center in the country to be named a Center of Excellence for Bariatric Surgery by the Employers Centers of Excellence Network, or ECEN. The program is designed to grant employees of participating businesses access to the highest quality care and health plan innovation in the United States. One of those participating businesses is Walmart. With the addition of Roller Weight Loss and Northwest Medical Center, Walmart now has health system partners in 18 cities across the country. Although this is the first center of excellence in its home state of Arkansas and just the fifth bariatric center of excellence in the country. Here's Dr. Josh Roller with more on the process of becoming a center of excellence.
So there's lots of distinctions that are out there in the world of bariatric surgery, and they mostly revolve around excellent outcomes and low complication rates, which has always been kind of the scary part about employers covering weight loss surgery. And Walmart has decided to start covering weight loss surgery as of a couple of years ago, and they're using an outfit called the Employer Center of Excellence Network. And what they do is they take large employers, and they basically will run the bariatric benefit for them, and they're in charge of finding the best programs in the country to service their customers' patients. So, for instance, in this case, Walmart. They also, you know, represent some other major companies. Walmart's the only one of those companies that has a bariatric surgery benefit right now. So that's the main one. But it's a pretty rigorous process where the ECEN is what we refer to this. They came in, did a big site visit at our clinic at Northwest Medical Center in Springdale, going to be sure that we had everything that we need to have. We had to submit all of our data and outcomes for the past, I want to say it's 3 years, could be 5 years, and which we have to submit our data anyway for our other accreditations. And basically at that point, you know, they selected us as one of their centers. And so we're up there with Geisinger Health in Pennsylvania is one, Baptist Health in San Antonio is one, Scripps Hospital in San Diego is one, and then Cleveland Clinic in Ohio is one. And then we're Roller Weight Loss and Advanced Surgery, Northwest Medical Center became the fifth one in the country as of a few months ago.
Yeah, that's pretty heady stuff when you do the roll call like that. Also explain the connection with Northwest Medical Center. I mean, this involves them too. They're your hospital partner in this distinction, right?
They are, and they've had to do, you know, when I decided to come here 12 years ago, I had my plan set on going back to Tulsa where I grew up and was from, and the Northwest Medical Center had called they were looking for a fellowship trained bariatric surgeon. They had the foresight to realize that having that fellowship training is critical to outcomes. And we came that day 12 years ago and had a phenomenal visit. And we changed 5 years of planning to go back home where our parents were to stay here in Northwest Arkansas and start a program here. And so we're a private practice group. We're independent. We're not bought and owned by any hospital organization. However, for bariatric surgery to work well, you've got to have a very strong hospital partner. And Northwest has been great in the sense that they let the surgeons, or in this case myself, lead the program and put patient care first. And for, you know, we offer great surgeries and have great outcomes, but to do that, you know, you need the hospital to help you out. And so we have dedicated OR teams where only people that we've trained for 3 months are in on our team with those patients. And a lot of people don't think about it. You know, when you go into a surgery, you're asleep, but you know who the surgeon is, but do you know who anybody else in that room is? Well, I can tell my patients that when they have surgery with us, we have roller weight loss trained scrub techs, circulators, and anesthesia providers. So it's something that helps with good outcomes and patient safety. And, you know, it's just almost standard of care amongst these Center of Excellence programs at this point.
Roller has performed over 6,000 bariatric surgeries and was the region's first fellowship-trained bariatric surgeon. He said the healthcare costs associated with obesity are expensive and are driving increased demand for the surgical procedure.
So if someone has a body mass index of 35 or higher, and that's about 60 pounds or more overweight, the odds of what we call medical weight loss or anything that's not surgical works less than 1% of the time. And think about that in any other setting. If you go into your doctor for high blood pressure and they say, we're going to put you on a medicine that works less than 1% of the time, you look at that guy and say, I don't want that medicine. That's a waste. And so I think we're finally there where obesity is so rampant. I mean, 2/3 of Americans now are obese. And Arkansas is notoriously in the top 5, generally speaking, in the most obese states in the country.
Roller started his practice in Fayetteville along with his wife, Dr. Kristen Roller, in 2007 as a team of 5. Today, there are 53 employees with multiple locations serving Northwest Arkansas, Fort Smith, and the Tulsa Metro. You can read more about their practice in our story at nwabusinessjournal.com. Finally today, a couple of business expansions in Washington County. National real estate company Krylock Real Estate Services has opened a second Fayetteville office on West Weddington Drive. The company now has 25 offices in the state, including 10 in Benton and Washington counties. And for a more local flavor, the owners of Bentonville restaurant The Buttered Biscuit announced this week they are planning a second location in Springdale. It'll be in the Harbor Meadows District west of Interstate 49, and owner Anna Russell is hoping to have the business open by the end of the year. That's going to do it for us today on the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. For more interviews, stories, videos, and podcasts, visit us online at nwabusinessjournal.com and follow along at both Facebook and Twitter. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
Contributors this hour included Susanna Sitek, who also provided sound and information about the elementary school ribbon cutting in Rogers, and Jacqueline Froelich. Timothy Dennis mastered our show. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF 91.3, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Harrison. We end with music selected by Antoinette Grajeda, recorded for us in the Carver Center for Public Radio. Today, she's picked the song Don't Think by Jamie Lou Connolly and Garrett Brolin from Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo. The band performs at Bike Rack Brewing in Bentonville Saturday evening beginning at 7. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday.